As soon as we saw the price dip into the mid-70s, we saw buyers step in, which is what we expected. And the reason for that is you have a 3-year forward, 5-year forward pricing in the high 80s, low 90s. And you have a midterm price essentially that will support a mid-70s spot price due to the carry trade. So you'll have traders that can actually sign a midterm delivery deal in the long-term contracting market with a utility and buy in the spot market. And they'll carry that on their books. They'll calculate the cost of carry, the cost of the capital, whatever it might be, small profit margin. And that will equal a relative bottom or a floor in the spot price somewhere in the mid 70s. That, of course, relies on the fact that utilities would have to have some demand in the midterm, which they do right now. So assuming there's some demand there from utilities and we don't have a full-on liquidity event, we should see a floor in the spot price, you know, a couple of bucks below where it is right now. That's what the producers want because they all believe that we'll be seeing higher prices in the future. Utilities, of course, if they had their way, would sign fixed price contracts all day long. And nobody wants to do that except for a couple of these brownfield restarts. And that's in diminishing volume. So it's a very tricky place. And you know, a lot of investors will look at utilities' habits right now and behaviors and say, they're crazy. Why are they attending the WNA? They're looking at the fuel report and seeing this massive supply problem going out into the next decade and beyond. And why are they not signing contracts right now? Well, if you think about it, fuel buyers at most of these utilities have been working on this for many decades. They've been working this in this industry for many decades. And what has been their experience? Cheap, abundant uranium all the time, with the exception of 04 to 07, which was the Chinese buying in heavy volumes for a couple of years and a mine flood. And then you had the financials come after it. And that was a blip and a moment in time. And every other moment for their entire career has been abundant secondary supply. The Kazakhs ramping. There's no other Kazakhstan, by the way. And so this is a whole different world. And they're calling up Cameco. And Cameco is saying, sure, we've got uranium for you, 2028 to 2033, whatever you want. Here's our terms. 75% reference to the market at the time of delivery, with a floor at $80 and a ceiling at 130. It's becoming more and more a talking point in the industry. What is going to happen with their pipeline? Because the industry knows that Cigar Lake is done in 10 years. MacArthur River is done in 15. What is going to replace that, if anything? So they're going to have to start answering these questions, not quite yet. As of now, they're saying, we've got plenty of tier two capacity. And they do have a decent amount, but they don't have anything that the likes of which can replace Cigar and MacArthur. So those two things are definitely on my radar for the coming weeks and months.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. Steve Yang here. Today, we're joined by one of the most respected voices in the uranium space, Justin Hune, founder of Uranium Insider. Justin, I believe you're from Southern California. You're probably one of the few uranium natural resource guys who I trust to give me a reliable food review. I'm a SoCal kid myself. Do you miss it?
No, not necessarily. Yeah.
How does a SoCal guy like you end up becoming one of the go-to voices in the uranium sector? Was there a light bulb moment when you realized this is it, this is where I'm planting my flag, or did you just stumble upon uranium and never look back?
Pretty much stumbled upon it and never looked back. It came to me, the thesis came to me in a podcast interview, actually, that happened to coincide with the precise bottom for the commodity. I'm not kidding. It was December of 2016. It was Frank Curzio's Wall Street Unplugged. He interviewed Jordan Trimble from Sky Harbor Resources. And at the time, I was primarily a momentum technical trader, not really into fundamental investing at the time. And this was one of those things like, wow, first of all, it was kind of turned my whole perception of nuclear energy on its head the more I dug into it and realized, you know, just a few years prior to that was Fukushima. And I recall being very concerned and very worried about the impact of nuclear energy. And oh my God, there's 450 of these things around the world. We're all screwed. You know, that sort of feeling. And the more I actually dug into it, that was inspired by the investing thesis, the more I realized how much I didn't know about the industry, how important it is, how safe it is, how clean it is. And that in and of itself was very intriguing to me. So dug in as deep as I could, found really a very, very compelling investing thesis and kind of never looked back. Really had nothing to do with being in California, despite it all. But it's been a wonderful experience for me. I've met a lot of amazing people in this industry. The industry is very, very small. Going to these conferences, it's sort of like a big family reunion, sort of. And so I really enjoy engaging with the industry. And regardless of the investment, I'm now an unabashed nuclear advocate. I'm hoping that nuclear grows substantially during my lifetime, for the benefit of humanity, really. But the investing thesis is still very, very strong. I'd argue it's stronger than it's ever been, despite the fact that I've been following it at this point for almost 10 years. It'll be 9 years next month. But seriously following it for probably more like 6 or 7 years. So that's where we're at now. Happy to get into any elements of that.
Yeah. Well, Justin, I looked at the charts again this morning, and we had a sharp sell-off in the spring, a springtime implosion. Then we've since rebounded, and we've seen some spikes and dips along the way, but we've had an overall upward trend. This morning, I saw that uranium was slightly over 80 spot. Curious about the springtime implosion. First of all, what was the reason for that mass sell-off from your view, and what flipped the switch back on the recovery?
So I think that the springtime was really sort of the tail end of a decent length consolidation that happened following the peak of the spot price and the move that happened the prior year. So Q3 of 2023 into Q1 of 2024, the spot price doubled. I mean, it doubled over the course of about 6 months. It was a huge, huge run. Big run for the equities, big run for the spot price. The term price moved up a bit. And at that point, the utilities sort of stepped back. The sector got a little bit overheated. The utilities demand really stepped back in 2024 in both the term market and the spot market. And that allowed the price to settle back to kind of where it naturally would, lacking a very much primary demand, uh-huh. Let's say demand from end users. So that settling out of price really kind of coincided with sort of risk off scenario across markets. We had the Trump tariffs sort of being introduced, shaking up markets. So that contributed as well. We also had a number of smaller funds or larger funds with smaller, let's say, pod shops and sort of these factor baskets that had associated uranium equities with kind of general nuclear and AI story. So that was really hot also kind of late 24 is when we had the news of Microsoft making a deal with Constellation to restart Three Mile Island Unit 1. And so this, that was a big story. The tech companies engaging with nuclear was a big story. And we sort of benefited a little bit from that in the run up in late 24, which was very short lived, September, October. Uh-huh. And once the markets kind of went risk off, some of the AI names went risk off, uranium just got thrown into that. And you had some very near term theories on the short side back at the time. I recall this like February, March, where you had, again, some of these factor baskets and pod shops that basically were like one of our best trades right now, one of our number one trades is being short Sput and being uh-huh. short uranium here. Sput has to come into the market. They were running out of cash. The markets were risk off. They were not able to raise any money in the ATM. So they were running out of cash, and everybody thought that they were going to have to sell some uranium. At the time, we thought the same thing. They were going to have to sell 50,000, 100,000 pounds, really an uh-huh. immaterial amount of their holdings to keep the lights on, essentially. But that was their reasoning for shorting the whole sector. And so they shorted the hell out of the sector in Q1. And it just got beat down. Sentiment was worse than I've seen it in March and early April of this year since I've been following the market. I mean, it was worse than COVID. That's how bad it was for uranium equities in March and April of this year. And what a sea change it's been since then, really. It was just a washout across the board. Risk off markets in general, the uranium market specifically getting shorted, terrible, terrible sentiment. And we saw the spot price also fall into the, I think it bottomed 63 something, I believe was the low in the first week of April. Of course, it's been a V-shaped recovery and then some since then. But yeah, terrible sell-off. Starting to see a little bit more of that fundamental kind of end user demand step into the market slowly here, which is a very positive sign.
As we head into Q4, do you anticipate this upward momentum to continue, and what does Q4 look like, and why, and can you set that up for me?
It's hard to say because Q4, really, we've got what, honestly, 6 weeks left before the holidays, and the markets usually just go quiet for the last 10 days of the year. It's hard to say from here until then. That's a very short time period. We are seeing some evidence of utilities stepping back into the market, but it doesn't appear to be super urgent or high volume. So that should at least support the price pretty close to where it is now, which is about $80 spot. As soon as we saw the price dip into the mid-70s, we saw buyers step in, which is what we expected. And the reason for that is you have a 3 year forward, 5 year forward pricing in the high 80s, low 90s. And you have a midterm price essentially that will support a mid-70s spot price due to the carry trade. So you'll have traders that can actually sign a midterm delivery deal in the long-term contracting market with a utility and buy in the spot market. And they'll carry that on their books. They'll calculate the cost of carry, the cost of the capital, whatever it might be, small profit margin. And that will equal a relative bottom or a floor in the spot price somewhere in the mid-70s. That, of course, relies on the fact that utilities would have to have some demand in the midterm, which they do right now. So assuming there's some demand there from utilities and we don't have a full-on liquidity event, we should see a floor in the spot price, a couple of bucks below where it is right now. The equities, on the other hand, have had a very, very good year. The spot price is only up about, less than 10% on the year. And some of these equities have doubled and beyond. So it's been a very, very strong year. The equities are pricing in a higher uranium price. Whether that happens in the next 6 weeks is hard to say. But either way, between now and let's say the end of Q2 of next year, we expect this move to continue. We expect to see significantly higher prices. And the last 2 months, we've seen an uptick in the move in the long-term price. And that's probably more important even than the fluctuations in spot because they happen on such low volume that so the long-term price had a strong move up leading into the early part of 2024. Then it basically stagnated within a $1 or $2 trading range for, almost a year and a half. The last 2 months, it's moved up $2 a month, according to both price reporters. It's now $85 as a blend between UxC and TradeTech. And so that's a good sign. We think that, and going back, 3 or 4 years, this has been a repeated pattern where you have a year and a half period of stagnation for the long-term price, and then an 8 to 12 month move where it moves up significantly higher, 30-40% move up. So we think we're in like month two of what could be a 7, 8, 9, 10 month move for the long-term ticker.
Wow, that's bullish. So as you look into the new year, and I know you're dialed into fundamentals and valuations better than most, what key catalysts are on your radar right now?
Well, we do expect to hear more news out of the U.S. for more large nuclear builds, even though we've heard a lot of news over the previous weeks, right? We saw the U.S. and commit to investing $80 billion, taking a stake in Brookfield and Westinghouse, which Cameco is a minority ownership of as well, to build, according to Westinghouse's latest price estimates, 10 to 13 new large AP1000s. Now, of course, it's going to take some time to get all of the ducks in a row and actually hit shovels in the ground, but that is incredibly positive. This administration is definitely serious about building nuclear, so that's really good to see. We think there's much, much more to come on that front. So that's not necessarily next week or even next month, but this is going to continue. This story is not going away. It's a huge tailwind for the sector, and the tailwind really has to do more with the de-risking of the existing fleet. So all of the operating reactors in the United States, which is still the largest nuclear market in the world, are being life extended. And that is going to continue. Now we're talking about new nuclear. It's not something that was on our radar at all going back even just a couple of years. But any new large reactors built here in the United States, even if they come online 7, 8, 9 years down the road, we're talking about fuel demand coming in, let's say 6 years from now, 5 years from now, 7 years from now. And that period of time, while it seems like it's very far away, that's the period of time where utilities still have a lot of uncovered needs that they're going to be coming to market for over the next couple of years. So these big builds, as soon as they actually start happening, that's going to have a meaningful impact on the long-term contracting market and the uranium market. So I don't know if I would want to call that a catalyst necessarily, but those news pieces are going to continue to hit. They're going to hit the tape as the months and years progress. We're Cameco's conference call is tomorrow morning, very early for their Q3. Everybody will be paying attention to whether or not they expect McArthur River to restart. It's essentially been shut down for a number of months because they've run into some issues moving into the new phase of that mine. They expect, according to their last conference call, they expect that McArthur River is going to produce 3 to 4 million pounds less than its nameplate, typical 18 million pounds a year. So we'll be paying attention to that and any other signals the company might have as far as planned ramping of production from McArthur River, which seems highly unlikely at this point. They continue to sort of play sort of the standoff with the utilities. And there is a standoff right now between utilities and the legacy producers. So the utilities, the contracts that they are signing right now, which is only 50 million pounds year to date, which is about 25% of their, you know, maybe closer to 30% of their burn up rate. So they're really not contracting in very high volume right now. And the contracts they are signing have been carry trades, and they've been smaller volume contracts with developers like Lotus and Aura and Boston and Encore and things like that. Companies that are willing to sign smaller contracts at lower prices because they are restarting brownfield production and or building out new mines. And so they'll give the utilities better terms that they like better. Utilities looking at companies like Cameco, Kazatomprom, Orano, Uranium One, BHP even, that are wanting contracts that are much more referenced to the market. So that is to say, at the time of delivery, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years from now, they'll be paying whatever the market price is at that time. And that's what the producers want, because they all believe that we'll be seeing higher prices in the future. Utilities, of course, if they had their way, would sign fixed price contracts all day long. And nobody wants to do that except for a couple of these brownfield restarts. And that's in diminishing volume. So it's a very tricky place. And you know, a lot of investors will look at utilities habits right now and behaviors and say, they're crazy. Why are they attending the WNA? They're looking at the fuel report and seeing this massive supply problem going out into the next decade and beyond. And why are they not signing contracts right now? Well, if you think about it, fuel buyers at most of these utilities have been working on this for many decades, have been working in this industry for many decades. And what has been their experience? Cheap, abundant uranium all the time, with the exception of 04 to 07, which was the Chinese buying in heavy volumes for a couple of years and a mine flood. And then you had the financials come after it. And that was a blip and a moment in time. And every other moment for their entire career has been abundant secondary supply. The Kazakhs ramping. There's no other Kazakhstan, by the way. And so this is a whole different world. And they're calling up Cameco. And Cameco is saying, sure, we've got uranium for you, 2028 to 2033, whatever you want. Here's our terms. 75% reference to the market at the time of delivery, with a floor at $80 and a ceiling at 130. Okay, so they've got a $60 a pound spread between the floor and the ceiling. How do you budget around that? It's a very, very difficult thing for a utility to engage with, but they're going to have to, because those are the terms of the people that are selling the thing that they need. So Catalyst, hard to say what happens in the conference call tomorrow with Cameco, but it's always sort of the event of the quarter. We need to know what's happening with McArthur. We'd like to hear signals from the company, what their plans are in terms of production. And it's becoming more and more a talking point in the industry. What is going to happen with their pipeline? Because the industry knows that Cigar Lake is done in 10 years. McArthur River is done in 15. What is going to replace that, if anything? So they're going to have to start answering these questions. Not quite yet. As of now, they're saying, we've got plenty of tier two capacity. And they do have a decent amount, but they don't have anything that the likes of which can replace Cigar and McArthur. So those two things are definitely on my radar for the coming weeks and months.
Justin, for those of us who aren't as familiar with the significance of Cigar Lake in 10 years and why that timeline matters, and why is it, like, if it's 10 years, why is that such a concern right now?
It's a concern right now because it's one of the two primary mines that the second largest producer in the world, which is Cameco, is utilizing to fulfill the contract demand on behalf of utilities. And the main reason this really matters is that it takes hundreds of millions, if not billions, in the case of a mine like Cigar Lake, to explore for, discover, develop, and build into a mine. And that capital is not being invested by Cameco or anyone else, for that matter, in developing anything that's the size of replacing that. So we're looking at an environment right now where nuclear is growing 4% a year compound annual, and the demand for uranium is growing at the same rate. So the demand is only growing, and you have a number of legacy mines that are large that have been producing into this industry for many, many, many years that are going to be declining in their production rates and eventually falling off. So Cigar Lake will go pretty close to that 18 million nameplate before it's closed. Maybe the last year it'll produce half of that. We also have Rössing, that is a big mine in Namibia that's going to be coming offline around the same time frame. Additionally, mines in Kazakhstan, you know, they produced from their best stuff into the lowest price environment during the bear market. And so what we're seeing right now, and this came out of their conference call or their trading update that came out yesterday, which is basically they're going to struggle in ramping their production. And they don't really want to ramp their production, but they're under some pressure from the joint venture partners, primarily the Russians, because the Russians are short uranium, to ramp their production. And the assets that they're building now are just not as good and not as easy to mine. They take more sulfuric acid input. And so the Kazakhs are already highlighting that they're going to have an enormous amount of capital expenditures to develop new projects in the country to even be able to produce at about 75% of the rate they're producing now, 10 years from now. So about a third of the projects in Kazakhstan are going to be seeing decline rates, significant decline rates in the next 10 years. At the same time, Cigar is going to be coming offline. At the same time that Rössing is going to be coming offline. And then you only have 5 or 6 more years of MacArthur. So MacArthur and Cigar are the highest grade, biggest uranium mines in the world. It's up there. Husab is a big one, open pit in Namibia. That's going to go for a very long time. But these are important because the industry needs capital. And I think that's one of the biggest things that utilities are not really paying attention to here, which is they look at the feasibility studies for a developing company like NextGen, for example. They'll say, okay, you've got this small cash cost and you've got these developing CapEx. We see your numbers. Why are you wanting to sign a contract with $150 ceiling? So they see it almost like a cash grab. But what they don't understand is that all of these companies, especially the legacy producers, have to price in the future, have to price in the cost of decommissioning these mines and reestablishing a pipeline of projects. And that has a huge, huge cost that they need to sink before they can ever sell a single pound of uranium from those projects. So there's going to have to be some sort of meeting of the minds, let's say, between utilities and the producers. And the producers, like Cameco, they're not caving in to what the utilities want here. They're sticking to their guns because they understand what they are going to have to spend in order to replace Cigar Lake. And the utilities are not quite at the point where they're ready to sign these market reference contracts with the huge difference between the floors and the ceilings. It's a difficult thing for them to do, but they're going to have to at some point step up to the table. That's what we still have ahead of us.
Justin, you've mentioned Kazakhstan. Are there, and I know that we live in a world of tension and war. Is there stuff geopolitically that you're looking carefully to see that would dramatically perhaps affect the uranium market that you're keeping a close eye on at this point in time?
Not necessarily. I think that there's been concerns around concerns as far as the market is concerned, not concerns from a humanitarian perspective of the conflict in Ukraine ending and some sort of peace deal being signed with the United States involved and renegotiating the ban of Russian imports. I'm not concerned about that at all. Even obviously I hope that that conflict does end, of course, from a humanitarian perspective, but it's pretty obvious what the Trump administration is doing as far as like pro-America kind of everything. So even with that conflict ending, I don't think that the current Russian ban, which is essentially granting waivers to every shipment so far. So they're continuing to receive Russian material into the United States, but that will be cut off in January of 2028. No more waivers are allowed from January 2028 to 2040. And so, and that's basically been legislated. That wasn't done by executive order under Biden. So what that means is for it to go away, it would have to be legislated. So you'd have to have the Senate and the House vote in favor of continuing to receive Russian material in the US. And I think that's a highly, highly unlikely thing to happen. Even if it did, you have to understand too that Russian material has been, still is under the Russian suspension agreement, which limits the amount on 100% basis as a percentage of how much they can import, which is about 25% of the needs of the U.S. fleet in enriched uranium. So even if that legislation was reversed via legislation, we would still have the RSA in theory. Even if that was gone, we've had access to Russian uranium all throughout the bull market so far. And we've seen the prices of conversion and enrichment triple over the last 3 years. We've seen price of uranium go from $18 to $80. So it is a global marketplace, and I don't expect something like that to happen, first of all. And if it did, it wouldn't really be the end of the world. It would shake up the market in the near term. As far as Kazakhstan is concerned, clearly they are trying to appease both Russia and China, which both have very large influences on the country. So they are just now establishing a nuclear program where they're going to be building nuclear plants, and they awarded the first nuclear build to Russia and the second and possibly third to China. Of course, both the Russians and the Chinese are fantastic at building nuclear plants, so it makes sense for them to make deals with both of them. But it's very clear that more and more of the material out of that country is going to be going primarily to China. Most of the uranium that goes to Russia out of Kazakhstan is through their joint ventures. And their biggest development project is the Buinovskaya 6 and 7 project, which is a JV with Rosatom. And that's the one they're trying to push really hard, or the Russians are trying to push really hard to get that up to its max capacity. So as far as other geopolitical situations, most of the other uranium coming out of Australia, I don't think that's going to be impacted in any way. Namibia should be fine. Kazakhstan, I don't know that we're going to see any actual impacts to where that material, it's just being consumed at a more aggressive rate by the East. And then Canada, of course. So probably not is my estimation on that front.
Justin, for those who aren't as familiar of how it's affecting the market, you've mentioned tariffs, you mentioned pro-America, everything. Could you tell us a little bit about how the current administration pushes has been a game changer for the uranium market?
Well, I would say that the policies as far as taking the growth of energy and electricity production very, very seriously has been a major tailwind. As far as tariffs go, I don't think it's going to be affecting us very much, primarily because what we've seen so far, uranium has been an exception to certain tariffs that have been imposed, like on Canada. So that's been the case. We have seen increased tariffs on Chinese imports. So Chinese EUP, that's a very small volume that does come into the U.S., but that's getting more expensive via that. Not really a meaningful shakeup in the market. I would say just the biggest way is that everybody has been considering the United States to basically be dead in the water with nuclear since we haven't built anything since the Vogtle 3 and 4 plants. And that was so expensive and over schedule overruns and cost overruns that everyone considered nuclear is never going to be built again in the States. And the fact that might now be something that we can pencil into supply and demand models in the next 12 to 24 months is very, very exciting. It's also curious to look and see how this might affect other countries in the West in terms of building nuclear, just to see that the US is doing this again. If we can actually get this going and get these things built, and if we can do it on time and on budget, would be amazing and a huge, huge tailwind, not only for uranium demand, but just a big statement to the Western world that it isn't just the South Koreans and the Chinese and the Russians that can build these things. Now, we can do this too. And we did it before. We can do it again. So I think that it's a big statement of sentiment around nuclear. As far as uranium demand goes, just the de-risking of the fleet, the life extensions, and that was happening under Biden as well. But just seeing the response and the taking seriously of the electricity demand situation with the growth of data centers and AI primarily, that the administration is taking seriously. I think that they're going to do what they can and what they have to do to incentivize the industry to get this done. And that's going to have a meaningful, it's going to be a meaningful tailwind for this sector for the foreseeable future.
Justin, if you could be so kind as to explain spot versus term for those who are not familiar, and why it's so important in the industry in, you know, plain simple English, if you can give us the difference between spot price, term, and contract, and why and how investors should separate the headlines from real fundamentals that matter, and, you know, what we look at versus what gets all the attention and and you know what really matters and how do we look at it and understand it?
Sure. So the spot price essentially is for uranium purchased with settlement in less than 12 months. That really is what it is. It's not necessarily a separate market. Most of the spot market, and I'll quote Mike Alkin from Sachem Cove here, is it's a surplus disposal market. So it's a place where traders and certain producers will sell a little bit of material when they have it, when they choose to sell it. It isn't really a place where utilities will go for reliable supply. Utilities have engaged more this year in the spot market. That's primarily been because the term price has been sticking, because the terms that the legacy producers want, like I was just mentioning, are not really aligned with what the utilities want. And so when the price dipped into the 60s and now more lately into the 70s, and then we saw utilities step in. But the spot price, it reflects the spot market, and the spot price is updated intraday. So that's what investors watch, because it's something that they can, that's tangible, something they can see on a daily basis. The term price is updated at the end of each month. So the term market is much more cloaked in secrecy. The contract terms are not made public almost ever. There are services that you can pay for, like we do, to get more detail on that market. But the term market is anything beyond 12 months from now settlement. And that is where utilities procure most of their uranium needs. Most of the time, the utilities are looking out beyond, let's say, 2 years, and they're looking at 3 to 10 years out is really the period of time utilities are typically buying for in volume. Now, like I said, they'll engage in carry trades. They'll do some opportunistic buying in the spot market, but it isn't where they're going to meet most of their volume needs in terms of actual uranium. The two markets are inextricably linked via carry traders. So as the term price climbs, that will essentially pull the spot price up, because there will be trades done between those. And that's exactly what has happened over the past 6 months. So if you go 6 months ago, you would argue that the floor was probably into the mid to high 70s, because the term price is at 80. The 3 year forward was at 82 or whatever it was. Now we have a 3 year forward at 90 or 89. And a term price is now 85. And now what do we see? The floor is being met in the mid 70s. And so the floor literally jumped up by $10 since April. And that's because of the traders that are connecting those two markets. So we're in an uptrend in the price right now, even though if you see the spot price drop by a dollar on any random day, whatever, most of the time the spot market will be essentially not glued to, but influenced by the long-term market. Sometimes you have severe risk on or risk off situations in the markets where you'll see the financialization of the sector. You'll see in severe risk off, you'll see hedge funds that are holding physical uranium sell uranium into the market just to reduce risk and free up some cash, and that'll push the price down. It's an illiquid market. We'll only see 4 to 5 million pounds traded in the spot market on a monthly basis. To give you an idea, utilities will consume almost 200 million pounds this year. It's a small and illiquid market, but at the same time, risk on markets and the financialization of the market on the long side can push the price up. And we see that with Sprott Physical Uranium Trust. You know, when they're raising cash, sometimes you'll see, like intraday, you'll see, their ATM is on. Well, they probably raised this much money. Traders will go and buy pounds in the spot market, hoping to sell to the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust 2 or 3 days later at a higher price. So you'll actually see markets dictate kind of the price. The equities markets dictate the price in the spot market. Not all the time, but when it's risk on, risk off. But yeah, those two markets are connected. The term market is really where we put most of our focus and attention in, because we feel that that really has most of the influence on the overall market. A spot market can go up and down on very low volumes. So most of the time, I wouldn't say it doesn't matter. It does absolutely matter. A, because that's what equities investors watch. And B, because now we're seeing producers actually want market reference contracts. And the contracts, regardless of the fact that utilities haven't signed a lot of volume there, in the term market of the past couple of years, we are seeing that the contracts that are being signed have a greater percentage that is referenced to the market. And what that means is at the time of delivery, it'll be, usually like a three month up to maybe 6 month average of the spot price is what the utility will pay to the producer at the time of delivery. So the spot price matters. It matters a lot. But as far as volume is concerned, most of the volume is procured in the term market. And the action, the price action of the term market, I would argue matters a little bit more than the spot market.
So for someone who believes in uranium and doesn't have access to the service that you pay for, the knowledge that you get, it almost seems as though they're at a huge disadvantage. And it's the information that you get for term, it's almost critical. I don't know if that you see that continuing. Would you first of all agree with that, do you see that continuing, or do you see that shifting a bit?
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. I would say that unless you are literally buying the ETFs and trading the charts in this sector, like you can do a lot of reading on the sector that's outside of these paid services and get a generally decent read on the overall fundamental trade and then trade the charts. But if you actually want to have conviction when the markets are volatile, you have to know what's happening in the physical market. And that's something that just looking at the spot price is not going to tell you. And so, a perfect example is going back to March, April. The week that the spot price bottomed at 62, not only were you being surrounded by abysmal sentiment, but you were seeing the price continue to decline. And so maybe you were loosely bullish on the sector, but all of the evidence on the screen was that this is going to zero, right? That's what everybody was thinking.
Yeah.
But for us to be able to have access to information on what's happening in the physical market, we could actually see almost in real time that the utilities were buying in the spot market when the price hit that level, that carry trades were starting to get done. And that was something that we were able to communicate to our membership and say, hey, yes, it looks like the sky is falling, but we're seeing the fundamental buyer step in here. This is the floor. And that actually coincided with the bottom for the equities as well. So if you didn't have that information, you can go back and look at the volumes late March, early April. I mean, that was pure capitulation. But of course, for every seller, there's a buyer. So, if you had a read on what was happening in the physical market, at the very least, you would know not to sell the bottom, if not have enough conviction to put some money to work then, which has paid off enormously well since then, obviously. Now, did we know that we would recover back to, let's say, the mean and then go on another 50% move? No, of course not. We didn't know that in March or April. The equities have had a torrid run, having a decent pullback to around the 50-day here, which is totally fine technically. But yes, you have to have that information if you want to invest in a fundamental way. If you want to trade the charts, just trade the charts. You don't need any of this information. Mm-hmm. But if you want to invest fundamentally, it's absolutely imperative that you have that information, in my opinion.
Justin, curious about how to invest in the bull market. You know, if someone's bullish on uranium, where is the value right now? Is it in majors, developers, juniors, royalties? And then when you talk about, constructing a portfolio, I mean, how do you maximize torque, manage risk? I mean, what's your kind of philosophy on building that?
Sure. That's a good question. Well, that answer really depends on where the market is at any given time, right? So the equities, I would argue, have moved, and I don't have to argue this, it's clear in the charts. You can chart, the uranium ETFs against the spot price. They've moved up substantially against the price of uranium, even though uranium has moved up also, but they've outperformed the commodity significantly in the last 6 months. So the equities are probably due for a bit of a pullback. They're having that here. If we have a few more days or weeks like this, I would say the value is in, even the midterm developers and producers and some of the large caps. Those have run the hardest. Really, if we're looking at a snapshot right this very moment on November 4th, I would say there's enormous value in some of the small caps, some of the small cap developing companies, because the market just has not wanted these things at all over the past run. So some of these just haven't moved, or they've moved up half as much or a quarter as much as some of the big large cap producers or developers. And there are some quality names there with some decent projects. And we have not seen that super euphoric, enthusiastic type of bull market yet where everything moves. And also keep in mind, URNM is going to, the index that URNM tracks just changed their inclusion their inclusion requirements. So there's going to be a number of names that are going to be dropped from the index in mid-December. So there could be kind of a small cap sale at the later part of this year. I would say look out for that. I would argue the screaming buy that if you want to just close your eyes with the lowest amount of risk and the best risk adjusted proposition is just the physical commodity is SPUT. That's really what it's all about here. I think because the price hasn't really moved that much at all. The equity's mm-hmm. gone on a good run. The price hasn't moved. So for us, SPUT is an incredible, incredible value proposition here. Yes, if we go to $150 uranium, will the equities outperform SPUT? Probably. Mm-hmm. But the downside risk here for SPUT versus the equities, I would say, is minimal. Unless we have a serious liquidity event, we should see the bottom in SPUT, you know, a dollar or two or maybe three down from where we are today. That's pretty minimal. Yes, SPUT can trade at a wider discount to NAV. We've seen it happen before. It's traded as wide as 17 or 18% discount. I think it's right now, it's just a few percentage points. So that could go wider, but what is that? Let's say a 15% downside to what we think could be 100% upside. It's liquid. You can buy as much as you want. So SPUT's a strong value proposition. But if we have a healthy pullback, if we have a 200-day pullback in the sector, I would say buy the absolute hell out of it because we're going to see a move up in price. That's going to happen.
Justin, for investors who are investing in uranium, what's the biggest mistake that you see new investors making? Is it underestimating, you know, geopolitical risk, permits, not vetting management companies? Is it chasing hype? What do you see typically where we're making mistakes?
Oh man, where do I start? I would say the biggest mistake that I've seen is getting overly bullish on a single name or maybe two names and putting all of your money into one or two names because you believe that's going to outperform just a general basket. And maybe it will. And maybe you're Druckenmiller, but maybe you're not, uh-huh. right? Uh-huh. I mean, it's really, you have to protect your capital in the sector. So diversify within the sector. Don't put all of your eggs in one basket and only the uranium basket. This shouldn't be your only holding in your portfolio. It should not be just uranium. It's not my only long. I'm obviously mostly long uranium because it's what I know best and I feel like I can trade it quite well. Mm-hmm. But allocate carefully. Don't buy just one or two names. Don't use margin. Don't use leverage. Don't buy short-dated calls or puts for that matter. Mm-hmm. And definitely tranche into positions because it's very easy. The sector for some reason it evokes a lot of emotion in investors for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's the volatility.
It's a reaction.
Yeah, it's the volatility. It's what happened in the previous bull market when we had, you know, stocks return 5-10,000% in 3 or 4 years and people have a memory of that. So they're like, I don't want to miss it. I'm going all in right now. Enter into tranches, despite how excited you are right now. Most of the time, this market will give you opportunity. Always keep a little bit of cash on hand. Don't go all in just because you believe some certain name or now is the time. Be patient with yourself. Be patient with this market. This is going to be, despite the fact that I've been following this for as many years as I have, I still think we have a long runway here. I really do. I don't see where this ends. I don't know where the supply will come from eventually to breach demand. And actually trigger a move down in the price. So I think we have many years ahead of us. Be patient. Don't get too excited about one name. No margin, no leverage, tranche into positions.
Justin, you mentioned demand. I'm guessing that AI and the growth of AI plays a factor in that. Do you see those things being related and increasing the demand for it that actually necessitates an overall upward trajectory?
Definitely. Yeah. We wrote a lot about that in this month's newsletter, which actually just came out this morning, which is, it's kind of the golden age of power right now. It's what everybody's talking about. It's the limiting factor for the growth of AI is power availability. And, you know, nuclear is not a immediate source of electricity if it's not already existing. Mm-hmm. What we've seen, like I said, is life extension of the existing fleet. We've seen a lot of existing producers Existing utilities with nuclear plants sign power purchase agreements with tech companies and data center builders. And then we've seen the restart of multiple reactors, right? Palisades is about to restart any day now. Three Mile Island will be a couple of years. Duane Arnold in Iowa is going to restart. And they just announced that the VC Summer plant, which was halted construction back in 2017, is going to be resumed. That construction is going to resume two more AP1000s. So yeah, it's a general tailwind, electricity demand growth in general, whether it's coming from AI or data centers or whatever, is going to be helpful for this industry. But as far as the AI situation looks, as far as we can tell, it's here to stay. It looks like it's going to be a persistent trend, and it could usher in an absolute renaissance in nuclear. And so that's why we're seeing multiple nations saying we need to triple nuclear by 2050. Are we on pace to do that? No. Will we be 5 years from now? That remains to be seen, but it looks very positive.
Justin, what's one thing the market, if you can share, what's the one thing the market is completely missing right now? Something you look at and think, how does no one else see this? Do you have anything that comes to mind?
I think what the market misses in general is a long-term vision. And that's something that you talk about the market in the mid-2030s and most people just roll their eyes. They want to know what's happening next week. And of course, you want to know what's happening next week and next month as an investor, right? And just to protect your own portfolio or invest accordingly. But what's happening in the middle of the next decade matters right now. And because it takes so long, we've got a 2 to 3 year fuel cycle to buy uranium. And from uranium to fabricated fuel takes 2 to 2.5, sometimes 3 years. So utilities are always looking into the future. And utilities are generally covered for their needs right now. You go out a year, almost everyone's covered. You go out 2 years, decently covered. There's a few here and there that are not. You go out 5 years, and almost all of the United States utilities, for example, are not covered. They need to buy uranium for that period. 10 years, almost nobody has uranium. And that's also a period of time, like I said, where these big mines are coming offline. And that really, really matters. The other thing I would say is that when you look at something like the WNA's fuel report graphic, supply and demand graphic, and you see what they're baking in supply that is in the feasibility stage. So they believe, and of course they have discount rates on all this stuff, but they do believe that they're going to see supply from pretty much anything that's in the feasibility stage. And so they're expecting certain supply to come online on a certain timeline. And I would say that what a lot of people are not paying attention to is that there is a very, very high likelihood that some of these 2B development projects that are expected to be producing uranium in 28, 29, 30, 31, either are not going to be built or are not going to be built on time. And when they're delayed, it's going to be a very, very big shock, especially to the utilities, but it's going to be a shock to the industry and to the equities, to the upside as well. So most of the risks to this sector are right tail. There's not a lot that I can see on the supply side that's going to be surprising to the market. There's new technologies that are coming, laser enrichment and things like that, that are slow to come. And for all intents and purposes, I hope that these are developed for the growth of nuclear. We need them. You go out to 2040, we don't know where the uranium is going to come from yet. And that's a big problem for the industry. So
yeah,
I would say that most of the time investors are far too focused on next week and next month. Excuse me. Not focused enough on a decade out and beyond, because that does matter now.
Justin, I know that you are coming off of a cold, so thank you for being here. Love to see if you can just tell me a little bit more about Uranium Insider. What is Uranium Insider? Who's it designed for, and how can people follow you and get plugged into your research?
Sure, absolutely. UraniumInsider.com is where you can find us. I'm also decently active on X at Uranium Insider. We've been doing this since 2019. I have a dedicated team behind me, including an ex-hedge fund guy who's very, very experienced in the markets. this is our focus on a day-to-day basis. So I'd like to say that if you have money at risk in this sector, you have to subscribe to some form of information, like we were talking about earlier, so that you have the information regarding the physical market. You have to know what's happening there. Otherwise, you're in the dark. I'm in multiple direct message groups on X, and a lot of these folks, the retail guys, and they're good guys, and a lot of them are very, very intelligent. But a lot of times I'll see commentary on a day-to-day basis, like, what's happening with this? What's happening with that? And you really have to know. And it's so volatile, you will get shaken out. So that's really what we focus on the most. And what we hear the most from our membership is, thank you for keeping me in this trade. And that's the most, like, it's almost like we become sort of therapists in a way when things get really rough, because you have to know what's happening. So a heavy focus on the physical market. We communicate daily with our membership. We have members-only webinars once a month where we bring on industry execs to talk the market, in-depth monthly webinars, monthly newsletters, excuse me, and also do weekly updates in video form for the membership as well. So if you're long this sector, I believe it's an invaluable resource.
Justin, can you give the X handle or your...
It's at Uranium Insider.
Okay, great. Well, I'll make sure that the links are all in the show notes. Before we wrap up, are you getting any Dodgers hates from the people in our industry yet?
No, I haven't received that yet. I know that was, I'm not necessarily a Dodgers fan, but I like to watch a close ball game. So it was an exciting series either way, but
that was heartbreaking
for the yeah, Jays, for sure.
For sure. But that was, you know, all things said, that was one of the craziest, most interesting, entertaining games I've ever seen. Well, Justin, seriously, I know that you're sick. Thanks for being on the show. Regardless, I appreciate your time and your insights. Everyone go check out the Uranium Insider. This is one of the smartest go-to people in this sector for sure. Thanks for tuning in. I'm just Steve Yang, learning with you from people smarter than myself. Stay smart, stay curious, stay disciplined. Justin, thanks again.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Steve.